I know, you can't believe it. It's the Celtic Underground Podcast. Well, we can't let multiple victories over Rangers go without doing some podcasts, so here we are. And I'm joined by Eddie Pearson to talk about the victory in the Scottish Cup semi-final and then ramble on for ages about loads of stuff. I normally start podcasts with some sort of build-up, and then afterwards I record the intro bit where I then say who's going to be on the podcast. So there is no point in any sort of build-up. I'm joined by Eddie Pearson. How are you doing?
Hello, how are you? I'm very well. Thank you for asking. It's been a lovely day today. It has been
a nice day. Tell me how your day started. Tell me about your day going up to the game. Where were you sitting? Who were you with?
Well, my day started with mass, obviously, and I hope it started with mass for everybody else. And if it hasn't, maybe that's why the second half didn't go quite the way we wanted it, and you might be thoroughly ashamed of yourself. But okay, putting that to one side. So driving to the game.
I have to interject here that if that's the process, then we shouldn't have had a shite early to mid 1990s based on my life, and we should have had a really shite last 15 years. So there you go. Doesn't really count for much.
No, but who's to say how good it could have been if you just get your finger out and set your alarm a bit early on a Sunday morning? But anyway, that's a podcast for another day. That'd be an ecumenical matter. Driving to the game this morning, I had that moment that it just felt like throughout the 90s and in the last 20 years, that when you're going to Hampden and it's raining, you think, oh, this will suit them. This will suit them better than it suits us. And it doesn't. You know, we play our game. As always, but driving towards the game, I thought, oh, the rain here's a bit of a problem. But lovely walk down Aikenhead Road, taking in a few of the old sites, pointing out to Pearson Jr. that that's where there used to be an altar server at Christ the King and all that sort of stuff. And he goes, I know, you've told me that before. You actually made me go into that chapel and look at it last time we had a game. I'm like, right, okay. In at the South Stand, there in plenty of time. £4.10 for a steak pie. £4.10. Two steak pies, a Coke, and a Bovril, £14 odd. The wee man paid for it, but that's outrageous.
But you do know you are showing your age here. Like, what happens to people of our age is pricing gets stuck round about the mid-1990s, and anything more than mid-1990s pricing starts to fuel outrageous pricing.
But honestly, I don't intend to spend any money at the football. See, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't buy a programme at Hampden. I wouldn't buy any food anywhere. I'm very much of the school of, I paid my season ticket, and that's what you're getting out of me, and that's all you're getting out of me. But he's like, should we get a pie? Should we do this? Should we do that? He's still caught up in the, let's have a day. Let's have a day out. We're not having a day out. We've come to see the Celtic, and we're going to go home when the Celtic go off the pitch. That's it. That's what you're here for. That's all you're here for. And so, can I get a programme? What do you want a programme for? You don't read it. Right? Anyway, I'm projecting a wee bit here. But
maybe he's going to turn into, maybe he wants to be a programme collector.
Well, you know, that would be good if he ever took them out the motor when we get back into the house at night. I'm still finding programmes from about 4 or 5 weeks ago sitting in my car thinking, what do you buy that for? He doesn't even read it at half time. He reads his phone. Right, anyway, sorry. That's not really relevant, right? So there are people that have tuned into this. The five folk that have tuned into this want to hear us talk about this, you know, like, rather than just my domestic problems. But okay. I'll try and get away from that. I feel like I might come back to it at a later point, but I'll try and get away from it. The big drama was that our two tickets were, I had row Q, seat 122 and seat 124. And we stood together and I'm thinking, hope the guy that's in seat 123 doesn't come on and go, no, I'm not moving, mate. No, that's my seat and I'm sitting there. But fortunately, it was a good guy. And so two of us were able to sit together and watch the place build up.
How did you end up with a gap between your seats?
I'll need to ask the man that I get to buy my tickets for me. I've got a man that does that for me, as you know. And I really don't know what he did about that at all. The questions going to be asked.
He doesn't understand numbers or anything like that.
Numbers aren't his strong point, no, not at all. But I've got a gentleman that I hire to do these things for me. I don't deal with menial tasks like that. So I don't know why that happened. But no, the guy was brand new. But we like to get in early. See when it's like half an hour before kickoff and people are coming in. I like to get there nice and early and just see it all build up. Now I may be dead born and everybody's like, I should be around the back of the Beechwood and doing that wee lane. Now, I've spent years doing that wee back lane. Now, it's not in the sense that you think, because my man used to work in the dairy at that wee set of shops way back in the day, and I played in that back lane when I was away. That back lane's bogging. I'm not going anywhere near that back lane. I've seen what's in that back lane. So I just like to get into the ground nice and early and just feel it start to build up and the atmosphere start to be created and fans coming in and start to see the seats fill up and all that and just get to that point of watching them warm up. I love all that. I just feel as if that's all part of the experience. So we were dead keen again a good hour beforehand and get there and get settled. And we had a great time.
But it's also because Scottish football stadiums are so well renowned for all the other facilities that you can take advantage of if you get in early.
It's an absolute pleasure to be there. A pleasure to be there. You're right. It's the whole experience. You know, there's a guy standing at a microphone with the two mascots on either side of him and Hoopy's doing stretching and warming up as if he's playing. And meanwhile, whatever the other guy is for Rangers is punching his chest and doing Roman salutes to the crowd. I'm very keen to say Roman salutes there, right? And you're like, very, very different here. Hoopy looks as though he's ready for a game and this one looks as though we who are about to die salute you. So you just watch all that on the big screen and then they show you every single goal that's been scored in the Scottish Cup up to that point, and then they show you every goal that's been scored by Celtic and by any former Rangers up to that point, and you go, sorry, these are ready. And then you have a wee conversation where you go, that Partick Thistle game, remember they let them score that goal? You know, wee things about that. So, yeah, we liked that. That was us. And we got to the game, and then finally, you don't get a decent reception. You don't get any Wi-Fi. Why do they not have public Wi-Fi at Hampden International Stadium so you can plug into it and get a decent reception? Because a guy comes over and goes, you seen the team, mate? Do you know what the team is? Because he's got there early as well. And just by chance, you had sent it to the group chat, so we saw it before we went in. So we were having a chat about that. I was a wee bit disappointed.
Although even that can sometimes not work. I mean, dropped my dad off and then was driving home and start getting all these WhatsApp messages flying in that people have sent halfway through the first half and stuff like that. So, yeah, you might not have even got my message about what the team was, but fortunately you did.
But I thought I would have played a Watter, and I'll come back to why that would have been wrong later on as we continue with conversation. But I'd have played a Watter in the midfield. I was pleased to see Hatate fit. I was pleased to see Jota fit on paper. But other than that, that was the only thing I felt about the team line that was a wee bit disappointing. As the game progressed, it became clear that I think how Hatate wasn't really fit. At least that was my take on it. And Iwata would have been a better option. But when Iwata came on, perhaps he didn't have the best of starts. And maybe that wouldn't have been the case. But other than that, I felt really comfortable. I looked at their team and it appeared nothing to fear there, nothing exciting. There's players that don't want to be there. There's players that aren't good enough to be there. There's players that are perennial losers that are very, very good at getting second prizes. And they were all on the team. And so I felt quite comfortable as the game started. These games, though, it's a one-off. It's a semi-final in the Scottish Cup. You know, this is me stating the obvious. If anybody doesn't know this, and what you doing listening to this? Obviously, you know, it's a semi-final in the Scottish Cup. My apologies. But I think back to like the Ronnie Dyla game, you know, where it takes a handball not being given and it screws us for a treble. I look back to the game against Mark Robertson's Rangers and we batter them and we play them off the park, we don't score, and they win it on penalties. Ain't can happen. So you've still got that tension. We know we're better than them. We know we're a better team than them. We know we're a better unit. We're better coached. We've got better individuals. We've got a better process. We're in their heads. They know we're better than them. But you've always got that tension before the game starts. But is it actually going to work out like that as the game progresses? So that was all the emotions as we built up to the game. So that's me right up until kickoff. What did you think yourself about the team line, about who we started? Were you happy with it? Did you feel as if we'd go any we should have went for anything different, or did it all look pretty good to you?
Well, to start your comment about the rain, always I was thinking this as the game kicked off. I was thinking about green and white, which is largely white with green hoops, effectively, right? It seems that's a brighter thing. And I was watching, and same as you, I was thinking, why is it that I always think Rangers do better in crap weather? And then I thought, it's because their strips, everything about them is darker than us. So when the weather's darker and a bit more foreboding, that sort of fits with them being a darker, more foreboding club. and the sad prejudices that I've got.
No, there's a dead interesting thing about that. See, when you look at it, and I know how much you love the Green Brigade and the boys and all that sort of stuff, you know, having been standing next to you. The League Cup final when you just said that pure mad rant at them and gave me the fight of my life when I was talking about something else at the time. The fact that they were on hoops and then you look to the other end and their Union Bears are all sitting in black and trying to be oppressive and dark and it's quite a different thing. And there's a lot of folks here, two sides of the same coin. I don't know if I buy into that quite as clearly.
Hello?
Because we didn't have it covered, you know, the green and the white, it reflects, it makes us look great, apart from our burnt faces. It's all about that sort of sense of, you know, when we started going through it in the 80s, when you know, you get to cup finals and it's the end of May and the sun's out and it just looks so bright, and they were always undercover and they looked dark and oppressive and miserable, and then when it rains, we don't get the benefit of looking positive and all that sort of stuff, and they get the benefit because they're miserable and it's dark anyway and wait for them. They'll look like that anyway. I think maybe that's what's going on. I might have just went off on one there. I don't know. Maybe somebody else would say, yeah, I agree with you or disagree with you.
But growing up as well, for us, we didn't win League Cup, which was the Winter Cup, Dark Weather Cup. We did win the Scottish Cup, which was the Summer Cup, apart from a couple of times in the early to mid-80s when the weather was shit. So
yes, we're a vitamin D team.
Exactly. So my day was picked up my dad. I was thinking about it because a group of four of us go and we only got two tickets for the cup final. It was just me and my dad. And I was just thinking about how, you know, he came to Scotland, no interest in football, but he had three boys in the west of Scotland. So we were interested in football. He started taking us to the football because we wanted to go to the football. And I was just thinking about it, going away with him from the ground. My first game, August 74, at home to Arbroath. And there I am, it's nearly 50 years later, almost 50 years later, and me and him are leaving the ground. And quite a lot of football has passed under the bridge since then. That's what I was thinking as I was leaving. It was quite nice to think about that. And going to the game part, went past the Beechwood. I sent you a picture. There's about six police vans just pulled up outside the Beechwood as I got there. And guys, right, police fully tooled up and everything were coming out of the vans. So I don't know what was going on around. One of the security people was speaking from the Beechwood, was speaking to the police, and all I heard her say was, so what are you going to do about it? So I don't know it particularly, the bit behind the dairy that you were talking about, that was mobbed, the lane was mobbed, so I don't know what she was asking them what they're going to do about it.
That's effectively the Beechwood Beer Garden now, that wee back lane and stuff, you know. That's what that is, that's where that's the alfresco dining.
alfresco crawfoot dining.
crawfoot.
That's King's Park, I apologise.
It's King's Park, get it right, crawfoot. Hey, listen. Don't be denigrating where I come from, right?
sorry, slightly more upmarket King's Park, alfresco dining.
I went to St. Mirren next, is there the St. Fillings? No, listen, we're good ones for the four of the blocks, right?
one of my mates is from there, so next time we get in our Dross and Salcoats and Stevenson mixed up, and he's a Rangers fan, so he won't be listening to this, but if he was, he'd be going mental. Every time I ever say to him something about living in Salcoats, I live in our Dross.
I don't know that part of the world at all.
Anyway, so got in the ground, got in half an hour early, not as early as you. And then got in and found that my seats were... So this is the thing. This is the only downside about Hampden and the nature of it and stuff. For years, I have rushed to get online as quickly as possible to try and get the south stand because it's the only stand that sits. And so my dad is 81 now. Phoned him about something else after the game. Once I dropped him off and got home, there's something I wanted to ask him. And he'd gone to his bed because he was knackered, having had to stand the whole game. And so the only disappointing thing is it's now even the south stand has morphed into everybody has to stand. And I know people, you know, people say, well, that's life. But, you know, not everybody's...
Everybody was sitting around me.
sitting wanting to do it. So, but we were right next to the... I was one aisle away from the padded seat, so Lubo walks right past me going up. So that was all very pleasant. And the team, again, I thought Iwata would start the way things had been going. And then, as you say, it was pretty clear as the game got going that Hatate was not fit. Because it wasn't that he was making mistakes or anything. He was just not where the ball was at any point. And your point about, and we'll get on to this, no doubt, your point about, but when Iwata came on, that's when they had their best spell. But actually, I just got the sense that it just looked like none of our three midfielders knew exactly who was supposed to be where once he came on. That's what it looked like to me, because nobody was picking up that area outside the box.
I don't think it's down to that. I suppose we can talk about second half when it comes, but I think their diamond midfield... caused this difficulty a wee bit, you know, because it's sort of matched up in the middle. There's an extra man pushing forward into sort of pressing where centre-halves, but don't spoil it for everybody that started talking about the second half before now, because obviously they're hanging on with every word. But I think it was good to see, and I think it was adventurous for us to go with two attacking midfielders in O'Reilly and Hatate, but I would say that I would be a bit more comfortable, a bit more security, particularly with Lundstrom starting for them. I thought a big guy's going to come on here and he's going to kick people, which is exactly what he did in the first 3 minutes. How he never get booked for that on Kyogo, I have no idea. He just right through the ball, took everything, took the man as well. Dangerous play, but got away with it because of the substitute, the referee, who didn't he? You know, it worked out for us because he didn't blow when he should have blown for fouls on Celtic players a number of times. But, you know, all's well that ends well. But I think if Lundstrom was playing, I would have liked to have seen Iwata. My thinking at the time and events, I would say, probably have proved me wrong because I don't think he was as influential as I'd like to have been. I would like to have seen Iwata on the park to basically just match up with him and just put him out of the game, because what they effectively did was they played a 4-2-3-1, but the three that they played, they did what Gerrard had done, was it keeps them quite tight together, and they all sort of congregate around about where McGregor plays, because they're trying to stop McGregor from influencing the game.
Yeah,
and you know, I see Tillman getting a hard time on Rangers boards, and you know, is he worth 5 million? And it probably isn't worth 5 million right now. He's a 20-year-old. I genuinely think there's a bit of quality there, and I think if they can't afford to spend 5 million on a player, you know, a project like that. But he's got something. He's not done it in big games, but he was working hard to stop McGregor from having the influence that he should have. The others that were around him, you know, like Kent was diabolical. Kent was really, really, really poor. Morelos tried to leave one on Carter Vickers a couple of times, realised that Carter Vickers was physically stronger than him, and then couldn't do it, and then just started to sort of wonder about moaning for a bit. But other than that, I felt as if we'll talk about Cantwell in the fullness of time, no doubt. You know, obviously was trying to create a sort of cult status for himself at such a Poundland shop level, do you know what I mean? But I actually thought that what they were trying to do by stopping McGregor having the influence in midfield, they did that again at the most recent game at Celtic Park, and they tried that tactic again. But because Lundstrom was playing, I would have liked to have seen Iwata, a bit more physical presence, matching up in the middle of the park. And I think Hatate wasn't fit enough You know, there was a really tired pass across the pitch at one point where he tried to play a you know, usual bold passes, and Hatate's pass completion rate, I don't know, you know, somebody will be able to tell us the statistics of it, but it doesn't get every pass right, but by God, he's ambitious. And that level of ambition is what's successful for us, and I think we've badly missed him in the last couple of games, because he plays forward passes. He doesn't play passes side to side, but this pass, he did try to play it across goal, about a Paul McStay type pass, and it just was so tired, and it just went the wrong way, and he went out for a throw-in, and he put his hands up. I just thought, you're one of the races. You know, and it just wasn't fit enough. And I was surprised he came out for the second half, to be honest, because he was so, I felt he was so out of touch and was unable to influence the game. So I felt we lost out there a wee bit. I thought O'Reilly had a very good first half. I felt he faded badly in the second half. I think O'Reilly's not had a great season. I think he's a good last month or so, would that be fair to say? I think the goals that he scored to Kilmarnock, I think gave him a lot of confidence, and I think he looked like a player that needed that. And so I thought he started quite brightly, was knocking about well. Jota back for injury, looked up for it. There was one point, there was a lovely ball came across. I want to say it came across in Maida, but I'm not sure. And you would have thought, and it was coming to him, and he just had to stop it and control it. A player of his ability, I would have expected to be able to stop it and control it. And he was free in the box. There was nobody around him. He was just pretty much on the six-yard box. And he just never got his foot to it, and he went under his foot. And you thought, of all the players who would want to get that ball, he's the man. And I thought, is his eye out a wee bit? You know, is he lacking a wee bit of match sharpness? So a wee bit concerned.
I actually thought all he did on that one was, he was so confident standing on his own with the ball coming across to him. I actually thought the problem was he was busy looking up, already thinking about where he was going to put the ball before he got the ball under control. And it was just as simple as not paying attention to doing the simple thing first before you do it.
You may well be right. You may well be right. And I think that because we're telling you, of all the players you would want that ball to come to, because he's got the technical ability to grab it and he could have done a bit of damage at that point. But he came on to a good game. I thought he looked the part. I think Maida, sometimes you look at Maida and you think at the things he can't do, and you don't always appreciate what he does do, the way he pushes Tavernier back. You know, their game is built along getting their full-backs up the pitch to start slinging crosses in from maybe about halfway into your half to get free kicks, to get set pieces, to try and put us under a bit of pressure. And he stops Tavernier getting forward and doing that, and he forces Tavernier to be a defender. And what we saw today was that whatever Tavernier is, he's not a defender. You know, the 100 goals that he scored, can't take that away from a guy that plays it right back. You know, I don't like him any more than anybody else that's listening to this likes him, but the guy scored 100 goals. But what, he isn't a good defender. And so if you can keep him having to stay in that right back position, you'll get opportunities and you'll put him under pressure because he doesn't have the concentration for that position. And Maida managed to do that. Sometimes they switched him a wee bit in the first half. I'm not always keen on that. I do think Jota's better on the left, but I think Maida's better against Tavernier. So that, in terms of that setup, and Kyogo, you know, that you always start Kyogo, you're not going to argue with that. The back line picks itself, goalkeeper picks himself. Cameron Carter-Vickers gets man of the match. I thought he was brilliant, particularly given he's carrying an injury, particularly given he's been needing a knee operation for what, last four or five weeks or so he's been playing.
Somebody told me at Christmas. I can't remember who it was. Somebody messaged me at Christmas to say, have you heard anything about Cameron Carter-Vickers? He needs an urgent knee operation. And then I just sort of forgot about it because it was never talked about, never mentioned. Then it's been talked about in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So, in fact, it was interesting because in the car on the way home, when they're trying to fill time on Radio Scotland before they can get the manager interviews, that was after they interviewed Ange, and Ange had said, that's it, Cameron Carter-Vickers' season's over now. And Willie Miller saying, that's really odd. You'd have thought, you wait until the season's properly over. I know Celtic have pretty much won the league, but the cup final, and I'm thinking, look, if we can't win, and I don't want to sound Mr. Blasé about it, but this is the reality of it. If we can't win, beat a team from mid-table in the championship in the cup final, we're not going to do it without with Cameron Carter-Vickers if we can't do it with him. You know, if we can't do it without him, we're not going to do it with him. So the most important thing is getting it done as early as possible so he's got recovery time so he can get the full pre-season in for Champions League football. That's what matters because the league's won. So, well, we obviously need the point to take over the line, but the league's won. And we should be winning the cup. So, so
I'm a little selfish in that regard that I would quite like him to be out recovering during the entire transfer window.
You know,
you know, there's something in there that says you can't keep playing a guy if he's injured, right? You played him in the big games, you need to play him in. We need to beat Hearts, or we need to take something for the Hearts game, and then we need 4 points to win the league. And whether we do that in the next game, maximum of 4 points, or we do it at Ibrox, or we do it in the game after that, the priority is just win the league. Doesn't matter when, doesn't matter how, win the league. Because once it's in it, once you get the trophy, you get the trophy. And nobody's asking questions about how early you won it, where you won it, anything like that. Nothing like that really matters. So I understand that the reasons for thinking, right, okay, get him treated now. But there's a bit of me would quite like to think, get him done in the start of June. And then he'll need June and July to recover. We'll get him back into rehab. Start of August. We don't have him for the first couple of domestic games, and we've got him ready for Champions League football. And funnily enough, the transfer window has closed at that point. Because I think he must be attractive to a Wolves type level in the Premiership, or you know, like that. Maybe even an Aston Villa. I don't know. I don't even know who Aston Villa centre halves are. They might have the two world beaters, you know, because I don't pay close enough attention. But see that level outside the top six, you know, between 10th and 6th, you know, why they're not looking at that guy, I have absolutely no idea, because he's a class act. He's an absolute class act.
Well, I think part of it might be, I remember listening to someone about how they'd recommended, it was a goalkeeper they'd recommended to one of those types of clubs, and it was just, we won't even consider, don't even bother telling me the guy's stats, because I'm not, the minute you've told me he's not 6'4" or above, I'm not interested in looking at him. Or 6'2", I think it was. 6'2" and above, I'm not interested in looking at him. And it was a keeper who was 6'1" or something like that. So it could well be that no matter how good he is, they will just not look at him because he's short, relatively speaking, for a centre-half.
We've had experience of that already with scouts recommending fantastic players from South America who are perhaps maybe a bit on the short side. That we don't bother to look at, who then go on to fantastic careers in the English.
A 5'11" and we're looking for a 6-foot player, that type of thing.
Yeah, that type of thing. So we bring in Abregard, who doesn't get a sniff for 6 months. But I can see that. I take your point. But you know, if you look at him rather than read about him, if you actually look at him, and this isn't an anti data thing, and like, you know, I'm not into all that, you know, see that sort of inverted snobbery about, you know, data's no use for football, you know, that anti-moneyball type idea. Data alongside looking at a player, that's how you do it. But if you don't look at Cameron Carter-Vickers, maybe you would think he's no good, because you look at his height and think, you can't have a centre-half. But then, Coyle at Barcelona, you think the exact same, you know, and he was one of the best centre-halves of the last 20 years. He's quality. He's absolutely quality, and I'm not comparing him to Poyle, you know, but he's quality. And he was outstanding today. Outstanding today. There was only one point in the whole game where him and Starfield had a miscommunication, where one was waiting for one to go to the ball and one was waiting for the other.
That was the first half, wasn't it?
First half, yeah. I think I'm I don't know. Kent, maybe? I think Kent.
No, was it not Fatty Morelos?
He managed to run for a period of time, so I really don't think it was Morelos, but it had a wee run through, never came to anything. But that was the only thing I could say was a problem, certainly in that first half. The two of them, Starfield looked really, really good as well. You got to give Starfield credit. I think Starfield is having a terrific season. I think he's taken a while to settle. I think he'd an okay season last season, good season last season, let's be honest. But I think he's had a very good season this season. To the extent that I could see is at least one of them not being here next year, given the fact we've got a left-sided Japanese centre-half sitting on the bench, I wouldn't be surprised if Starfield is available for transfer in the summer. You know, and so I'd rather Starfield goes than Cameron Carter-Vickers. So that's why, it's all the way back to the point, that's why I'd be quite keen for us to hold off his operation to a point that people are like, it's a serious operation. We better not bother signing him just now. We'll just keep an eye on him and we get at least another 6 months to a year out of him before we move him on.
The other thing about that, though, is if somebody mentions it to me round about Christmas, January time, and it's only now that he's going for it, one of the things we don't know is how much discomfort is he in every single game playing at the moment? And maybe that's why it's right. I tell you what, if you can just get yourself to the cup semi, once we knew who were playing the cup semi, if you can just get yourself to that game, you could have the operation the next day. Maybe that's been the conversation, just to get him there.
Totally agree with you, and it's a purely selfish viewpoint. It's not really worrying about the player's well-being or anything along those lines. It's purely for a Celtic point of view, and the people that are making those decisions are probably much more compassionate about the whole thing and much more sensible about the whole thing than I would be. I'm just being selfish and saying, you know, the only reason I would want him to get the operation later on is so that we've still got him come August. If they know that he's still going to be here come August, get him the operation tomorrow. You know, that would have a problem with that at all, you know.
So, now that we've gone through past the whole game to the transfer window, if we then come back to the game itself, so obviously we scored at 40 minutes, but up until the goal, what's your thoughts on the game? How do you see it going in the first 40 minutes?
I think we're comfortably the better side. I think we're making the better chances. I think we're putting them under pressure. It's similar to, I mean, we never really spoke after the game at Celtic Park, but I think it was similar in to the extent that they were trying to be stuffy and they were trying to shut the game down. What I did think was that, see their tactics were the exact same as Motherwell's last week. They were very, very slow to take by kicks. They were slowing the game down. They're walking to take corners. You know, and for a team that are supposed to be on a par with us, with this closing gap that we keep reading about, they were playing very much like a Motherwell, like a Livingston, like a Ross County, you know, up against a significantly better team and thinking, right, what's the only advantage we've got because we can't match them football-wise? Well, let's try and slow the game down and try and frustrate them. Let's try and stop the play. Let's keep the ball off the pitch for as long as we can. As long as they can't create and we just defend and be negative, then we can stay in the game and try and get a foothold in the game and then maybe get a break at some point. We've saw teams do that certainly for the last 20-odd years that Scottish football has moved into that zone where it's about, you know, just surviving against Celtic and against Rangers. But today was the first time I really saw a Rangers team actually doing that as well. And that sense of, they didn't really come at us. They let us play the football, and they were trying to, not even doing a Walter Smith defensive type counter-attacking play. It was just stay in the game was what their tactic seemed to be. So they were trying to close us down, and they worked hard to do that. They were trying to close off the angles and the opportunities. We were still trying to push out wide and try to create overloads on the left and on the right, with Hatate going over to the left and effectively creating a line of our fullback Hatate and our left winger, and similarly on the right with Johnson, with O'Reilly, and we were right winger, depending on who it was, whether it was Jota or Maida switching, and trying to find ways to get round the outside of our midfield, because their midfield was trying to stop us from playing. But we were pushing up, and as the game progressed, we were playing further and further forward, and they were going deeper and deeper, and it was almost, there was an inevitability about the goal. I felt that, to the extent that you think, I wish we'd have scored more when we're on top at that point, because we deserve it. But there was a definite sense of, we were getting into their box more. You know, Johnson has the shot from just on the edge of the box that McGregor makes a good save from. But generally, they didn't. I don't recall anything that caused me any concern. There was a couple of corner kicks, and you're thinking Goldson's can get up in the air, and Goldson can cause a bit of damage for set pieces, which is the nature of their game. But other than that, it didn't cause us any difficulty, I didn't think, in the first half. And we were vastly superior, and we deserved our lead. I loved the goal. the goal was great for so many different reasons. It was definitely a foul. We took it quick. McGregor, quick.
Do you know the only person on the, do you know the only Rangers supporter who wasn't expecting us to get a free kick for that was the referee?
That's the idea that makes it all the better. The fact that we took the free kick we were due, and we took it quick. Kent's sleeping. Then O'Reilly runs into that Raskin, or, you know, whatever. Is it Raskin?
Raskin. Aye, it was Raskin.
And everybody knows it's a foul. Everybody's waiting for it to be a foul. And they're waiting for, and they're complaining about the foul being given when it isn't given. And then Raskin shouts to the left back to come and collect the ball when he is closer to it. Closer to it. It's brilliant. And Maida's so quick. And Maida's cross is fantastic on the run. Fantastic on the run. But the other side of it is, you've got your right back for Rangers who can't defend, cannot defend, doesn't know how to do it, can't defend, and doesn't defend. And funnily enough, one winger feeds the other winger exactly as you want your wingers to do. One puts across, another one cuts in. Lovely, easy header. Lovely header. Dead straightforward. Dead simple goal. But because they went to sleep, now they'll talk about their mistakes. It was their mistake, no playing to the whistle. All that, remember all that talk back in the day when we were having to try to defend as a strong way, because we didn't know enough about them to defend them. But let's give Ange time. And we put this, they put the stuff up on the Celtic Twitter account. We never stop. They want to take a break. That's good for us. We'll take advantage. All of that sort of stuff. And people are going, see this is a lot of garbage. It's all talk. Are you telling me that a coach doesn't tell everybody that? We're all supposed to believe this guy's a tactical genius. We looked at the day. He absolutely looked at the day when he, because we never stopped and they did. And we're not playing on them.
And that's the thing. One, they all stop thinking we've just given away a free kick and we just keep playing. And we put the cross in. How many goals have we scored against them under Ange where one winger crosses it to another winger who cuts in with a fullback? Usually it's Barisic. This time it's Tavernier, just not paying attention. See, when you watch it, Tavernier checks over his shoulder about three times to see where Jota is. Like, before the ball comes in, he's looking around going, ah, he's there. I know where he is. And then the ball comes in and he's just standing watching it. That's a good cross you put in, by the way, mate. And Jota comes in and heads the ball in the back of the net. It is utterly ridiculous defending from them. But it is that thing of we never stop. And the thing that I liked, I've seen the interview with Ange on Viaplay where they talk about the Rangers' mistakes. And of course, there's quite a few games now where we have won, where one of the things has been a Rangers' mistake. Ange made the point, we press them into making mistakes. They make mistakes because we press them into make mistakes. So for me, that is another really important thing. They make mistakes. Who was it? Spoke to a football one. You know, doing the podcast, I went and spoke to a football person who pretty much their point was: once you get to a certain standard, there's only marginal differences in the technical ability between players at different clubs and at different levels. What starts to make the difference is how they cope under pressure and how they cope when they're having to make quick decisions. And it's the decision-making that's wrong and it's under pressure. In fact, again, can't remember which book it is. Remember, there's a football book that I read that talks about players under centre-halves not under pressure. Pass completion rate in the fourth tier of English football is the same as the Premiership of English football. It's when you put those players under pressure that the pass completion rate goes completely awry on the lower league players. And that is the thing. Because we are pressing them high up the park, because we've got the pace up front with Kyogo, Maeda, and even Hatate sometimes comes into press before Jota sometimes, because we've got that, that's why they're making mistakes. They're making mistakes because their technical ability is the same. They're making mistakes because they're marginally lesser players than our players. And so when under pressure, they can't cope. And they make mistakes. And so it's not just mistakes, it's our abilities that's making them make the mistakes. That's the thing for me.
The top level is the speed of thought.
Yep.
That makes a great player. You know, the idea that the instinctiveness, that ability to make decisions and to do things. You know, yeah, they have to be fast. They have to be technically good players. They have to be strong. All of that. But you know, all that stuff, like the first 5 yards is in your head and all that sort of, you know, there's something in that. And the speed of your decision-making at that point, they weren't fast enough. You know, you're right. Tavernier did look for him 3 times and did know where he was, but he still lost him.
Yeah.
Because the speed of thinking, you know, the decision-making isn't as good at all. Remember, this is a guy that came to Wigan and was playing in the Championship with Scotland. And he's had a great career for them. There's no two ways about it. He's their captain. He scored 100 goals for them. He's not good enough. He's not good enough at all. Because he can't defend. Because he doesn't think quickly enough. And that is the difference. And that's, we've seen tons of players come through at Celtic who we thought were technically good players, but they weren't good enough because they couldn't think fast enough. They couldn't make decisions quickly enough. They wanted too long on the ball. We've still got some players there just now that are like that. And the time will come when they have to move on. And you're right, you put them in a five-a-side game with their mates, that they're like Ronaldo. You know, they're like Messi. They're different class because they're technically so much better and they think faster than guys that are only football players. But at that level, when you've got to be able to do it, that's the difference between us and them. You know, Cantwell's an example of that. Cantwell's technically a very good player. You can see that, Cantwell's. He's got nice touches. He knows what he's doing. He's comfortable with the ball at his feet. He's not as good as the players we've got because he's not as quick of the mind as we've got. He can't see the things that our guys can see. He doesn't react quick enough. He wants more time on the ball. That's why he keeps diving all over the place looking for cheap fouls, because he's not as quick with a ball at his feet as he needs to be a top-level player. Because if he was a top-level player, he wouldn't be playing for them today. He'd either be with Norwich trying to get promotion, or he'd be playing for a lower-level team in the Championship, and he's no. And that's really significant because he doesn't think fast enough. And they don't have a team that think fast enough. And that's the difference.
The other thing on the Ange interview afterwards that I noticed in the first half in particular, he was talking about how they were asking questions about how well we defended today. And he actually thought this was a backhanded dig in some ways, because he said something about Rangers always pose a threat. They've got really good deliverers of set pieces. They always pose a threat at corner kicks and free kicks, Barisic and Tavernier. And I thought, gets back to what you were saying, they're just a better version of what Motherwell did to us last week, which is stop Celtic playing and just see if you can get a chance. Like, you know, last week, Motherwell had one chance in the game and scored it. And they're the same principle. They've worked out how to try and stop. You know, there's been some games in the last under Ange where we have blown them away. And what Beale has done is he's managed to work out how to stop us playing in the last two games. That's beat their system. Try and stop the centre half interacting with McGregor for us to build out. And then see what they can get out of their set-piece deliveries. That's what they're doing. And the thing that struck me in the first half was how many crosses Joe Hart came for. Because the big thing about Joe Hart is he just stays in his... You know, I always thought this under... them under Andy Gorham. Andy Gorham was shite at crosses. But...
To me.
He stood on his line and stayed on his line. And their two centre-halves knew he... I think the worst thing in the world for a centre-half is sometimes the keeper will come and sometimes he won't. It's better to know he either always comes or he never comes, and then you can deal with it if it's erratic when he comes. So Hart's decision is, for us, he stays in his line and our centre-halves go for it. What's really struck me is Ange makes the comment about we know what they're like with the set pieces, know this, and Hart came for more crosses in the first half than I've seen him come for corner kicks and stuff than I've seen him come probably half the season.
Mm-hmm.
And his punches were—he was getting the punches. They were well out of the box.
He was complaining that he was punching instead of collecting. I thought he's punched it practically at the halfway line. What do you want?
But that's also the very much the modern football thing of, if I always go to punch the ball, I'm not in two minds sometimes as to whether to try and catch it and realise at the last second I have to punch it and make a mess of it. I think in modern football, where the ball moves about it slightly deviates in the air and moves at pace. I think the whole concept for keepers in modern football is just be definite about what you're doing. So that's why you'll see them. They rarely catch shots these days, you know, unless it's straight down their stomach. Anything that's out with the line of their body, and their fists will be shut. To be hit, big, strong, hard wrists, their fists will be shut, and it'll be about just clearing the ball away from the danger area to avoid that thing. If they go to catch and they do a Henry Smith, it's to avoid a Henry Smith. That's why I did it. Funny you say about the guy behind you, because the other thing that I often think when I go to Hampden, modern football culture with season books, you get used to the comments of the people around you at a game. Because you're sitting with them all the time. And the thing that always strikes me when I go to Hampden is you hear people and you think, I mean, today the guys are shouting stuff when we're passing it about the back. What are you doing? What are you doing? Get it up the park. And you think, you feel like turning around and saying, hi, can I introduce you to Celtic Football Club? Don't know if you've seen them play football before. We do this every week, every single week, every minute of every game. Every week, this is how we play football. It seems to have come as a surprise to you, sir. Have you never been to a game before? That's what I feel like saying when you go to Hampden. It's always guys round about you. One of them's usually Saint, shouting about, get the ball up the park. Get the ball up the park. Hoof it up the park. What are you doing? Stop passing it about.
Well, they would have been better off on the other end of Hampden today, because that's exactly the tactic that they were employing. See the amount of times McGregor hit a long ball for them to chase, and it went direct to Hart, who had a brilliant game. A brilliant game, I thought he was really, really good. Their tactics were so Motherwell-esque today. You know, talking about Beal, you know, he's a thinker, he's been in Brazil, you know, all that sort of stuff. He's worked with Liverpool under-12s. What it did when they had the ball was incredibly limited. You know, there was nothing really creative about what they were trying to do. Neither played a cute ball in for somebody to run onto. They never played into the channels for somebody to get on the end of. It was really limited in their approach. And McGregor kept launching long balls to be chased. And then he didn't do that in the second half, and he didn't do that, when he gave it to Goldson, Goldson was absolutely tipped when Moy came on. Goldson was terrified every time Moy went near him. You could see him shaking and not passing it back. He didn't know what he was doing. There was nowhere for it to go. Their tactics today were so lacking in creativity or imagination that, yes, when they did the possession, it was the exact same at Celtic Park. When they did the possession at Celtic Park, it was because we gave them it far too often. Their first half wasn't particularly good in terms of the way their midfield kept turning the ball over. But they couldn't do anything with the ball. They hadn't thought through, right, once we get it, what do we do with it? So as the first half progressed for us, we were the only ones that were actually creating things. They might have had 45% possession, something like that, give or take, I'd imagine. I mean, there wouldn't have been much in the possession. But the difference was, when we've got the ball, we were doing things with it, whereas when they had the ball, it wasn't really going anywhere. There wasn't an idea, all right, what do we do? What's our plan? I couldn't really see, other than launch it long, chase it, try to put your defence under pressure, but he's trying to teach them to do.
Well, the thing on McGregor, I don't know how many times he launched the ball out of the park in the first half.
Yep.
Second half in particular. Don't many times he'd... But part of the reason why he launched it out of the park, because their tactic is diagonal ball to Tavernier and then see what happens. Your point about he's not a defender, but we have to accept he can take a penalty kick. I don't know how many of his 100 goals are penalties, maybe half of them. He can take a penalty kick, and you have to be fair, he can take a free kick, which means he's patently pretty good at delivering cross balls and putting balls. So that's their tactic. Diagonal ball to Tavernier, see what comes of it. As you say, it is so Motherwell Livingston-esque tactics.
But it's going to be touted as the gap's narrowing. Look how close we are. The only one 1-0, 3-2 in the last game. There's not a lot between the teams. Well, there might not be a lot between the teams in terms of the scoreline today, but see, in terms of the way we're trying to play football and what we understand football to be about. see, giving them, you know, the structure of Rangers, whatever Rangers you want to talk about, the money that should be coming out of that team, the players they should be able to attract, see if they're going to start adopting tactics which are Motherwell-esque, or which are a Livingston approach, you know, which is what they were doing today, then you've got to assume people are going to stop wanting to go and watch that. You've got to think that that's the case. If every team that's going to face us is going to try and put 10 men behind the ball and soak up pressure and then try and hit it long for a guy up front to chase, that, you've got to think at least when you play a game against a team coming out of Ibrox, you're going to get a relatively open game and a bit of football. But that's not what they seem to be built for at the moment. Certainly not in the first half.
Well, but the strange thing about that is, because much as he can score, right, the guy who does make our two centre-halves turn and does make them a bit uncertain when he's on the occasions when he's on the park is Sakala, because he runs at people with pace. Now, he subsequently can't score, but at least if you're a team that then, this is the thing I don't get about what they're doing then, if you're a team that then is going to be relying upon trying to get some set pieces and, you know, trying to get a foul that you can do something with, then if it was me, I wouldn't be playing Fatty Morelos up front. You know, if you're going to do that McGregor hoofball stuff, you play with Sakala through the middle. And then at least you've got someone with pace that the ball might be get in behind the two centre-halves, and then ask him, actually, don't try and get him to shoot. Ask him to run at the centre-halves and see if you can get a foul out of it that allows you to go 50 yards up the pitch. And then rely upon your Tavernier set-piece principle that they want to go on. So this tactical genius of Beale, I mean, not saying I'm a tactical genius, but to me that make, if that's the, if hoofball's your tactic, then surely that's a better, having Sakala through the middle is a better bet than having Morelos through the middle, who's, and the thing about closing the gap, I don't know if you saw the quote from Chris Sutton, there's no closing the gap cup. To be won for Rangers this season.
By the same token, we can't be complacent. Do you know what I mean? And maybe we can talk a bit about that. But I don't think we've been firing all cylinders the last few games. And I would genuinely say that I think we look as if we need the season to come to an end. I think we look a bit tired. We've got a few injuries starting to kick in. I think we've had a long season, and I think we want the season to be won. And I would make massive changes. See, as soon as the season's won, I'd make massive changes to our team that play in league games. All the guys that you know, I'd give Turnbull a game, I'd give Moy a game, I'd be looking for something different to try and rest players and try and keep a wee bit of freshness, because last few games, you know, certainly in a Motherwell game, okay, you can't win them all. I think it looks as if we lacked a wee bit of imagination, and we look tired. And I think we could go to Ibrox with no fans, with nothing to play for, and they could get a return. They could get a result out of that. You know, and that doesn't mean to say that they're better than us. And I'm not saying that, and I don't want people to think that I think that. But, you know, how many times did we see it? And I know people get bored of us talking about the 90s and stuff like that, and think, oh, here we go. See, like Daz again talking about the 90s. But how many times did we get a return in the final game in the 90s when nothing mattered? When they weren't bothered, when they dressed a few players, and we had to play for pride, and you know, and you guys that really wanted Celtic to do well.
Hamden 95, the Hamden season. Did we not win 3-0? Was it?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. And we go away thinking, see if we just sort this out for next season. and we kept our sail on. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we lose at Ibrox. I wouldn't be concerned, but nor would I be surprised. So what I'd like to see us thinking about making a couple of changes. The media and what have you will talk about, oh, look, there's a perfect example. If Bill can just get his own players in and do this, everything will be fine. I think it's deeper than that. I think it's much deeper than that. But I'm not overly concerned about what happens at the Ibrox game right now. We get to that point, I'm sitting in front of the telly watching it, I'll be desperate for us to win. Then every throw in will be a disaster. Same as any game against them. But I think that the idea, you know, the gap isn't closing. We're better than them. We need to stay better than them. That's got to be a priority. It doesn't mean to be that we can kid on that they'll never get better. They'll get a turn, but we need to keep looking at how do we improve. And as long as we focus on ourselves, everything will be okay. I think when you talk about Sakala there, it probably takes us into the second half. And when Sakala comes on and they go two up front and they change the layout and they play four at the back and they play a diamond midfield and they play two up front, they gave us problems. Not to the extent that they had a lot of chances. They hit the post, and then Sakala did a carbon copy of what he seems to like to do at Hampden by hitting it straight at the side net, and when the open goal was more inviting, we got away with one there. And if they had got that goal, and perhaps had taken it to extra time, would you have been confident that we would have won that game? You know, that second half was slightly different. Not to say they were better, not to say that we didn't deserve to win the game overall, but there was a point there where momentum was going with them, but they weren't creating enough, but nor were we. And in that second half, I think there are things there that we need to be better at in the second half if we want to win at Ibrox. And if we want to keep winning, we need to be thinking about. I think they were midfield tired. I was surprised Hatate came out in the second half. I wouldn't have. See, between your dog and people bringing me beers, there's a lot of background ambient noise going on in this podcast. I hope people just accept that and put up with it. If you don't like it, you can get your money back. But in that second half, did you not think, though, that would you have started Hatate in the second 45?
I really thought he's not coming out the second half. He was just so off the pace the whole game. Just patently. It's amazing how, I suppose, that's the difference when elite level, just a couple of weeks out and obviously not 100% fully fit. Looked like just that 5-10% that he's maybe not perfect just made him just anonymous. And as you say, there was that one crossfield pass that he did that ended up like 15 yards behind whoever it was aimed for and went straight out for a throw-in.
And that seems awful critical about one pass. And he'll do that sometimes. He'll try something ambitious and it won't work. But that, the difference with that was it felt a tired pass rather than a pass that just didn't work. Do you know what I mean by the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, maybe look at it. He played whatever it was, 60 minutes, and then he's got a day off tomorrow, and maybe the players will get 2 days off, I don't know, for a big game like that. And then a bit of training, he'll maybe be okay for the Hearts game at Tynecastle with a few extra days. And you know, maybe it was just a gamble that the manager did.
Clearly. He's got his players back. He wants to play his strongest team. Totally understand why he's doing it that way. But I would have thought that hasn't worked. Take him off. Bring Iowata on. But I was surprised when Iowata came on. And I was quite comfortable with the substitutions. He took a while to get into the game. He got a knock within the first 30 seconds when he received the ball. He was surprised to receive the ball for Carter Vickers. I don't think he was anticipating the ball coming to him at that point. The ball came for Carter Vickers because with them having two up front, they pressed the defence much, much deeper than I think. In the first half, the defence had much more time on the ball to knock it about, and they pressed the defence much harder. And that meant that we were, you know, obviously we're trying to invite them onto us to create space. I understand that. That's where the modern game works. But we were trying to pass along the byline a couple of times. You know, our defenders were very, very deep, and they were pressing us and pressing us, and we weren't really getting the breaks. And Carter Vickers tried to play the ball through to Iowata, and he get caught with it, and he hits it out for a throw-in because he wasn't anticipating it. And then he got caught, and he got a sore one. I want to say his right foot, but I suppose it doesn't really matter. And it took him a while to feel his way into the game, whereas Moy, who didn't look good against them at Celtic Park, looked to Roy, he was starting to feel as if perhaps the World Cup's catching up on him and he's 2 weeks, 3 weeks ahead of everybody else in terms of the amount of football he's played this season, perhaps needs a rest. I thought he actually came on and looked a bit more like himself, the way he was running with the ball a couple of times, again up against Tavernier, made him look stupid defensively and just got the ball away from him. He looked a bit better, but it did take us a bit of time to adjust to the way they were playing in midfield and actually trying to get a grip in the game again. And we didn't really impose ourselves. They didn't do enough with the ball. I don't mean that they were getting us, you know, run over the top of us. They didn't do anything creative with the ball, but we didn't have as much of the ball in the second half as I would have liked. And whilst, yeah, everybody's celebrating that we're in a final and, you know, we've got a very strong chance of the treble, let's call a spade, totally agree with that, and I'm delighted to be there. Don't get me wrong, and I don't want to rain in anybody's parade. But that second half, there are things here perhaps we should talk about, you know, and we should be aware of. We can't do anything about it, but I'm sure Angie would think about it. But you know, we're capable of better than that second half showed, I think.
Yeah, but then equally, the energy that we expend in a game, the number of games that we played this season, some of our better players being at the World Cup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's only, you know, how much we have completely dominated, averaging 3 goals a game in domestic football and stuff like that. I suppose it's not unreasonable that in the last 4 or 5 games, you know, when we're just nearly there, the players are starting to feel a bit tired and needing a rest.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And it's churlish to criticise. And I'm genuinely not. I just think I'm acknowledging the fact that I think the players are starting to look a bit tired. And the sooner we get the C next to our name on the league table, and then we start to give other guys a run out, you know. I don't like the reason for Ralston getting a game being that Alistair Johnson's walking about with a moon boot on at the end of the game. You know, that's not why. But I like the fact that Ralston's going to get a few games now. I like the fact that Carter Vickers is going to get rested and we'll bring a Japanese guy in to play centre half. I think that's a good thing. I'd like to mix this up in the midfield a wee bit. I still play Kyogo in every single game. I haven't said all that because I don't know if I'm convinced by O yet. I would like to be, but there's a bit of me thinks Giakoumakis would probably have scored more goals. I don't think Giakoumakis was a great player. I feel like Giakoumakis might have scored more goals than O has over the course of this half of the season.
I think so, yeah.
Do nothing to base that on. That's just the instincts of what I've saw him before to what I see O just now. I think O's raw, and I think there's he's going to need some work, you know. But so I wouldn't be looking to change him. But you know, there are things I'd like to see Vata getting a run. I would like to see Vata getting a run the day ahead of Haksabanovic. And I know that you want a more experienced player, a player that's played, you know, because it's only 1-0 and they're trying to batter you and try to put you under pressure. They've hit the post, they've hit the side netting. But other than that, they're not looking particularly good. It's easy for me to say. I'm sitting in the stand. I'm not having to make a decision. I would have liked to have seen Vata ahead of Haksabanovic today. I know why, wasn't he? Because I just think, I don't know, I just feel as if the jury's out in Haksabanovic, and maybe he needs a wee run of games towards the end of the season, where he's starting all the time and rest a couple of other players, and just give players a wee bit of breathing space and anticipation of the final and different things like that. I think we'll get one league. And I'd like to see a couple of wholesale changes, I think. And I think the second half today showed why maybe that might be necessary, because I think we're getting tired and I don't want to burn players out.
I think it'd be good for Vata to get a run of games. I thought he wasn't on for long, but he put in 2 great crosses against Motherwell, one of which O just needed to head the ball in a straight line. It was a goal. I think O would benefit from playing games, and not necessarily games when you're either bringing them on because we're already 3-4 up and so half the team's not as bothered, or you're bringing them on like today where his job is to do something slightly different because we're looking for him as an out ball to hold the ball up or whatever. So I think it'd be beneficial to him. Mm-hmm. I think, actually, I wonder about Moy, and because he'd been out of the team for a couple of weeks for the last Rangers game and then came in, was all over the place. I wonder if Moy's one of these players who just benefits from being, he plays his best football when he's played 5 or 6 games in a row. If you think about earlier in the season when people were unsure about him, he was in the team, out of the team, in the team, on as a sub. He then plays the World Cup, comes straight back to Celtic and is playing fantastic football. So he may be one of these people who just benefits from having a run of games. So actually, if he can get a run of 4 games or whatever it is between now and the cup final and is flying, then it gives the manager more options. I think Iwata, again, he's only just starting to get into the team, so it'd be good to get him more games. So there's quite a few players around the squad that you think, actually, it'd be beneficial in terms of judging you for next season as much as anything else, for you to play the last 4 games or whatever it is.
And I think today was a good example. I think the two of them took a wee bit of time to come into the game. I think the deciding factor in the second half was Sakala hitting that ball into side netting. You know, I think once that happened, I think they realised, oh, we're not good enough up here. You know, and they took Morelos off, and Morelos did nothing. You know, for all we've slagged them off over the years, and we've laughed at them and different things like that. You know, there's always a sense of apprehension that Morelos is a goal scorer and has been a goal scorer, maybe not so much this season, but has been a goal scorer for them over the years, and he's a dangerous player. But he did nothing today other than try to rumble him up a couple of times, try to leave one in Carter Vickers. Hart has a go at him. He pushes Hart, and the referee speaks to Hart and doesn't speak to him for lifting his hands. But that's just another example of Don Robertson not being a particularly good at his job. But when he comes off, once we start to get a grip on the game, we start to retain control, and we actually finish the stronger of the two teams. I think the narrative will be Rangers did the whole of the second half, and they had the majority of the second half. But we finished the game stronger than I think they did, because, you know, see, once they get to that 83rd minute, they know they're no scoring. You can see people starting to leave at their end. They know it's no for them. They know it's not going to happen for them. And they don't really believe that they can beat us.
No, that was the thing I was going to say. The other thing that was noticeable, don't really recall much singing from their end last 15, 20 minutes to try and lift their team to give it one more push. Because, like you, I think they know that there is just, you know, let's be honest about it, with the money that's spent, that's a team who the bulk of them played in a European final, were going for a European final this time last season. So there's some quality to those players, right? They're just individually just not as good as our players. And they know that. And so that's why they were resigned to it. And they were starting to leave before, you know, I think when the 5 minutes went up for injury time, they were starting to leave at that point. Because they'd seen that movie before. They know they're not going to score. And again, that's something I was going to say. You were mentioning about the Celtic Daz in the 1990s and stuff like that. Two things. People say, I'll use their terminology, for no firm game, form goes out the window. No, it doesn't. On the whole, the better team wins. Because you know what? That's what happens in every football game on the planet. In general, the better football team wins. However, one thing I would say is, when we were shite in the 90s, we seemed to have a better chance of winning games than they do. We occasionally did win games that matters. And again, without going over...
Doesn't it feel like it? Thinking back to the 90s, it doesn't feel like it.
Think about the St. Patrick's Day.
What are we talking, 92?
Yeah.
People were really shite. There's a lot of football played after that. You know, there's a lot of football played before that. Yes, we won that game. Absolutely. But other than that, I can't recall a single game of significance that we won. 5-1 game. Well, that was after we'd won the league. I can't recall a single game of significance that we won until Wim Janssen arrived. Let's be honest here. You know, yeah, we won that game. We won the week after as well. It was great. But ultimately, it meant nothing because we never won the cup that year.
No, we didn't win the trophy. But the point I'm making is, I am much more confident that we'll win games now than... I still thought we had chances of winning games. I don't think any chance of winning games at the moment against us.
Don't think they could win at Ibrox when none of your fans there.
They might do, but then the other thing is, what this even more reinforces is how utterly, remarkably freakish the season that they won the title was.
There's a lot of people want to talk about Neil Lennon with that and want to blame him, and you know my view.
No, I'm putting it down to because the bulk of their fans have changed. It's no fans that transforms everything.
But they can't cope with the pressure, and you've got players in their team just now who are trying to pander to their fans. You've got managers who are trying to tell the fans what they think they want to hear. They're going on follow.com and they're looking at the headings and they're just regurgitating what they think the fans want to hear, rather than tell, they don't want to hear the truth. They can't handle the truth. I'm not doing it. You get a general idea. They don't want to be confronted with the reality of where they are. They can't cope with it. So what they want instead is they want a narrative. They want a nice story that reinforces their sense of superiority, their misplaced sense of superiority that is a hereditary memory from the 1950s and 1940s when we were asked which school did you go to when they could stop us for getting jobs. They still want that to reinforce their sense of that they are better. And so what they've now got is they've got a manager that will tell them that. They've got a manager that will feed them the right lines, and then we'll have to come out after every game with his head down and go, nah, we weren't good enough there. You know, and swallow every piece of mince that he's come out with. They've got players that will tell them that, you know. Lundstrom's already talking about the next game straight after the last one. But we'll just need to do better next time. We'll show. You know, stop talking. You're doing yourselves no good at all. I do think that, you know, if we have players out and we rest players and we don't take the game being as important, perhaps because we've won the league already, or if we've not won the league, maybe we have to play all those players and we need to do it. But if we've won the league and we go to Ibrox, some changes to the team, but I hesitate to say a shadow team, but changes to the team, we've got no fans there. See, if they don't win, it could be their Mars bar game in that stadium. It could really be a game where the fans who have turned up, because there's a lot of them saying, nah, season's over, I'm not going, I'm going to get my overtime, my work and stuff like that. But the fans who have turned up could be chucking Mars bars at that board, and that could be great entertainment, but I don't think it will happen.
I don't know. I just think the mentality of Ange, I think we will draw it with a change team. But that's that game. Anything else to say about this game? I mean,
well, let's talk about a couple of midfielders. Let's first of all talk about Cantwell, right? Let's talk about Cantwell's approach to this game today. Cantwell's approach to this game today was to try and create a persona around himself that would endear him to the Rangers fans. I think he tried to leave a couple of bits on. How did he get booked today? Leave a couple of bits on a couple of our players. Medical bag. When Hatate went over to get a drink, when Tillman somehow never got given as a foul against him when he went in on Greg Taylor and injured himself to the extent he had to come off.
That's right.
And Don Robertson, yet again, never gave a foul on somebody who was doing a Celtic player, which worked out for the best because we got a goal eventually because of making those poor decisions. But he never gave a foul when he was getting treated. There was a medical bag, and Hattie goes over to get a drink, and Cantwell picks it up and moves it to the other side of the player getting treated to stop him getting that drink. I think that's a thing online for them. They're like, well, that's what I'm looking for. You know, so that's kind of the real quiz. You know, never mind winning the game and getting to the final. The fact that he went and moved that bag, that's the real quiz. That's what we want. That's the type of attitude that they want for their players. Unfortunately, Hatate then just walked round and gave Tavernier and Morelos the nod and says, all right, for tea, a drink of water, and they said aye. So he picked it up and walked away. But anyway, but Cantwell today was trying to play the plastic hard man and trying to make himself look as if he was all about, I'm taking this seriously. And what I particularly liked was when there was a throw-in, him showing it to the fans and trying to get a reaction for the fans and get them on side. And sometimes I think that's a good thing. And other times I think, see the fact you're trying to gee the fans up, that would suggest that you think they're too quiet and they're not supporting you, they're not engaging you. And what I thought came across there was, you really think you're not hearing enough of the fans today and you're making it dead obvious you're trying to gee them up to try and get them on side. And it was a lot of playing to the gallery. And what he really wants to do is, he wants to actually try and create something for his team rather than just play that plastic hard man thing and talk a good game. I think he looks a mediocre talent who will flit in and out of games, who will eventually be condemned by their support the same way Kent is being condemned by their support just now. Am I wrong?
No, and it's that thing of he'll get found out in games against us, because flat track bullies, they can beat everybody else in Scottish football. He is, you know, he's a decent player, not good enough, but, you know, he wouldn't be good enough to get a game for us, but he's a decent enough player, better than players who are than the rest of the SPL. And so I don't know whether he's early in his Rangers career, and so he doesn't realise that he's not good enough, you know, because he's filled with his own self-importance and thinks he's better than he is. And so when it's not happening for him in the games against us, he's trying to find, he's trying to unlock that thing that gives him the magic superpower to be the better player than he is. I don't know what it is, but what you're right, it's a bit like Beal. You know, it's the same principle of Beal, is you can do that thing and you can be the I'm one of you guys and look at me and I'm leaving the boot in, but eventually they'll get pissed off and they'll start getting on his back because he doesn't turn up in the big games. And it's a bit like, I've thought this from day one about Beal with his bullshit bingo. If I was Rangers PR or somebody very experienced who'd been at Rangers, even if it, you know, if I was in the media or something that was out of it, I'd be taking Beal aside and say, stop talking. Just please, please stop talking. Because see, all you are doing is creating a problem that, see, eventually the fans are going to turn around and say, shut the fuck up and just win games. And that's what's going to happen to him. And it's the same thing with Cantwell. It's that. And we've seen, I mean, how many players with both the new and the old Rangers, when they've not, how many players have we seen who come in and play up to trying to be this image of the player that they want? And eventually they turn on that guy.
Kent swung a punch at Brown, right? And Brown took a dive. We all know Brown took, we could see Brown took a dive to try and get booked. Naive, because it wasn't going to happen anyway. But they thought he was brilliant. What do they think of him right now? We all know what they think of him right now. So, see all of that, swinging a punch and doing this and doing the other. The only way that you endear yourself long-term to any support of any club is by being a good footballer and by winning games and winning trophies. That's how you do it. It's dead easy to play to the gallery. But sooner or later, even the most moronic of fans, and yes, we all know who I'm talking about in that, the most moronic of fans, see through that and say, it's all well and good giving it FTP all the time or whatever it is they want, but you're not winning us any games, so you're no good to us. And I think that that's where that guy's going to go. That's my take on it, because I think that guy is thinking that this is the easy way to get him on side, and it's much more complicated even for Rangers fans. Even for Rangers fans. Although they'll swallow any old garbage. But I think they'll see through him the same way they saw through Kent, the same way they saw through Morelos. But they have to come to themselves. So they can,
it's like Celtic fans who, if we ever don't have a good result against them, coming up to the next game against Rangers, Celtic fans who say, we need someone who's as physical as they were. We need to get in about them. And pretty much for the last 30 years, I've said the same thing to anybody who says that. No, we just need better footballers. Do you know what?
I do say it in that smug tone
because
they punch you right in the face.
No, because I'm right. It's a passive aggressive style that I've mastered.
You cultivated over the years, yes, and it's a major man you are today.
I am right. Better footballers. I love this sort of mentality of we just need. All right, okay. So if based on that theory, we should just sign the Livingston team as a B team that plays against Real Madrid in Champions League games. Just for those games. No, they get thumped. You just need.
I think Kevin Thompson would disagree with you. Kevin Thompson would disagree with you. It's about getting in their faces, was how he described it. The Kevin Thompson Academy must be, as I said it on Twitter, it must be a boxing gym or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, see this idea, Scottish football. You know, I understand you need to play, you need to be a dominant footballer.
Yep.
You need to dominate the game. You need to impose your style of play upon the game. And you need to take charge of the game. I get all of that. I don't disagree with any of that. But see this idea, you need to get in their faces. You need, and that's what Lundstrom did in the first couple of minutes. He went through Kyogo. Didn't he affect the way Kyogo played? He played the exact same game we would always play. Had no impact. You know, Tavernier tried to do it. Tillman tried to do it. Cantwell tried to do it. They all tried to do it. Raskin tried to do it, and it led to the goal. They were there to try and let's be physical. Let's be physical. Let's knock the ball on. Let's try and stay in the game and then try and get a break. It doesn't work. The trick is being a better footballing side, ultimately. Be the best footballing side. And they don't seem to understand that.
No, and that's one of the things, again, on my passive-aggressive superiority style of you just need better footballers principle. Easier said than done, because I'm not the guy getting my legs kicked. But actually, I've, again, long thought, if I'm a player out there and a Rangers player comes in and tries to go through me instead of just trying to beat me with the ball, the first thing that goes through my head is, wow, you don't think you're as good as me. I mean, that would be the first, anytime I see it, that would be the first thing that goes through my head. You don't think you're as good as me and you've got to put me up in the air. You're shite. I mean, and I actually think, and unfortunately some players don't have that mentality. I think someone like Jota's got that mentality. I think if somebody tries to put Jota up in the air, I do think the first thing that goes through his mind is, you're shite. And your only tactic to beat me is to try and put me up in the air. Well, that's brilliant, because I'm better than you.
And this is a man that can pull off double denim. So you're not going to be able to intimidate him in any aspect of his game. He is so comfortable in who he is that he's cutting a boot. And by the way, it's, you know, having checked the fashion pages of the main magazines in New York and Paris, I understand that double denim is on the way back. And for all his Celtic does, we can get our old gear back out, and if we can still fit into it, we can call it vintage. So it'll be fine for us.
But, he's watched a town called Malice on Sky and thought, that looks fucking magic. I'm doing my hair like that. I'm getting one of those dodgy moustaches. I'm going to get double denim. That's what he's been doing.
And then I'm going to score against the Rangers and score against the Rangers and score against the Rangers. That's what he thinks, because that's what he does. The other midfielder I want to talk about before we finish, Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor is now two games away, maybe three games away from winning five trebles. Now, Celtic and Rangers currently share the world title for domestic trebles, which is seven. Linfield are on five. And then you've got teams like PSG have done four and things like that. But I can't find, looking at when these teams have done these trebles, I can't find anything to suggest there is any player other than Callum McGregor who will potentially, and I know we need to win the games, you know, who knows what will happen. I mean, I think we'll beat Inverness Cali in the final, and I think we'll win the league. So I think we'll do the treble, but we have to actually still do it. But I can't see any other team that potentially would have a player who has been there to do five trebles. That's absolutely incredible, don't you think?
Do you know that the other thing, because they were making a big deal of, well, we went around when you won some of your trophies, type shite. The amazing thing is, we've raced through these most recent trebles when there has been a Rangers in the top flight, so there's no excuse from them about we were down in the lower leagues. Amazingly, that's when we didn't win them, when we should have done. And for him, I love Callum McGregor. I just think he's a brilliant footballer, and that is utterly amazing for him to win five trebles. I mean, it just shows you how lucky every Celtic fan under the age of 25 is as well. To witness all this.
Pearson Jr., we never get tickets for the last semi-final against them. He's never seen Celtic get beat a handing. You know, we have got beat a handing since he's been compos mentis to support them, but any game he's been at, Celtic have won. So if there's any dubiety about whether I get cup final tickets or no, somebody has to listen to this, because somebody has to take that wee man to the game to make sure we win that final. He's won every single game he's been at.
Your manservant who gets you the tickets will sort you out, don't worry.
Fingers crossed. I'll be asking them to. I was going to do a Jeeves and Wooster gag there, but I just feel as if he'll definitely not get me them. So I'm not. You know what he's like, right? But Callum McGregor. See, for a guy that's see if you'd bought a player like that, and he came in and he'd done that, you would have thought he was fantastic. But this is a guy who we've got pictures of him as a ball boy celebrating Celtic winning games. This is a guy that's been there since the age of 8. And doesn't he come from a Celtic-minded, whatever that is now, background? This is a guy that's bought into the club and loves the club. And I genuinely didn't think, see when Brown went, I wasn't sure about him as captain. I misunderstood who he was, I must be honest. I thought he was a quieter, more effective midfielder. But you forget, he's coming from Easterhouse, he's got something about him. And he's actually come in and he's dominated that position. He's dominated leadership. He's 100% exactly what Celtic should have. The whole thing about McGregor is just a wonderful aspect of Celtic story. And I can't think of anybody that is more deserving of the glory of 5 trebles than Callum McGregor. And see if he was captain to be the guy that picks up those 3 trophies. That's just a fantastic story in this season because he's been outstanding and we take him for granted. You know, when we talk about players of the year and we're talking about, you know, is it going to be Carter Vickers? Is it going to be Greg Taylor? Is it going to be this? Is it going to be that? You know, Callum McGregor could play at any level at any club. He is outstanding as a footballer and he's come through the ranks and hasn't cost us a penny. And he's on the verge of doing something that no other player in world football has done, which is winning 5 trebles. We're very lucky. We're very lucky to have him. We spoke about McStay, you know, when we were growing up and you know, you love McStay the way I love McStay. Is there a case for saying that McGregor is A, the new McStay, or B, and this sounds like heresy, better than McStay?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about the latter bit.
Yeah, right. Come on. What do you think?
No, I don't know if I could ever, you know, I talked before in a WhatsApp group about, you know, greatest ever Celtics. I hate that type of thing, you know, because you can only judge people that you've seen. How Jimmy McGrory's not the greatest ever Celtic is beyond me. But I never saw him play, so I can't do it. But basically, just based on his record, it's bonkers that he's not. But because people judge it on other criteria, what they've seen. But from what I've seen, I mean, it gets back to WhatsApp conversation I'll not do today that we had recently about Callum McGregor and different teams. The thing that I would say are very similar between Callum McGregor and Paul McStay, I remember saying, you know, 10 plus years ago, every single week, I would just have as much video as you could get of Paul McStay playing for Celtic, and then every youth, start of every season, I would get the every age group of the youths, people who play in midfield, I would just say, right, you're going in this room, put the big screen on, right? If you can ever, that's how you play your position, right? And we're just going to keep showing you this video, and it would just be videos of Paul McStay. And it's the same principle of Callum McGregor of, he manages to find space in the park. Football's a game of spaces. Of, you know, we talked earlier about the intelligence of players, and that's the difference. People, to a certain standard, have all got the same technique. It's then about their intelligence and how they use that technique. And one of the massive elements of technique is finding space on a football pitch. And Callum McGregor has a miraculous way of finding space when his colleagues need to find a guy who's in space. He's got it. He's a brilliant way of somebody playing the ball to him and actually managing to find space without touching the ball. He just sort of manages to turn the opposing midfielder who's closing him down so that he just actually lets the ball run in a straight line. And the guy's gone chasing shadows and then McGregor's off with the ball. He's just a fantastic, fantastic. There's someone we know who doesn't think he's as good as he is. He was on an inferior podcast that's not been aired for ages. But I just can't. There's just everything about Callum McGregor I love. Whether he's as good as Paul McStay, I think that would be.
Do you know, see, you said inferior podcast, that could be any number of people we know.
every other podcast.
Every other podcast.
Because again, with their passive-aggressive superiority style.
No, your passive-aggressive superiority style. Wait a minute. I'm not going to do with you on that one. I'm on man on this one. Your passive-aggressive superiority, but carry on.
So I often say, I'm an alpha male. I'm such an alpha male. I can spot the alpha male behaviour, let them behave away as alpha males, and laugh at my superiority to them.
No, I don't speak Greek, so I wouldn't know where to start with all that alpha male nonsense. I'm just hugely disappointed. You didn't get an invite to be on that Celtic and Rangers fans together interview with Chris Sutton and Ally McCoist. Did you see that?
Oh God, no.
that's pretty much who it was. It was all lining up together, and certain folk didn't take. Why folk chose to take part in it? They must have their own agenda, but why even engage with it? Anyway, that's a conversation all day. Right, before we finish though, right, mm-hmm. And I'm kind of taking over control of your hosting of it. The last time we've not spoken about this for ages. How good's Greg Taylor?
He is an amazing transformed player, isn't he? In fact, that was another thing I thought. There was a game relatively recently he didn't play, and our midfield didn't quite function the same way because people were just passing the ball to where Greg Taylor would normally be. And
he comes in and creates a double pivot when he does the inverted stuff. He's learned so much under Ange in terms, you know, I remember saying to you before that we were asking Greg Taylor to play in a way when he first came into the team that wasn't the way he was expected to do. Was at Kilmarnock because he played on right angles, he would look across to the defence and he'd look forward up the line, and that's what he was asked to do, and it was hard for him to do it. But Ange has turned him in to a completely different type of player. He's fantastic. He's up for Player of the Year this year, and he's deserving to be certainly be spoken about in those terms. And you all just disliked me for saying I thought he was a good player.
I did continually ask if you were if he was your secret love child, because you were so over the top.
He would be much better looking if he was. You know that.
And he'd be taller, probably, as well.
He would be taller. Not much, but he would be taller.
He's... It is amazing how, if you were to look at, right, okay, you're always wanting the team to develop, and yes, I'm quite sure that, obviously there are better left-backs out there than Greg Taylor. I'm not meaning that in a derogatory way, I'm just meaning that naturally he's not the world's best left-back. But if you were to look at, if we don't sell in, I mean, no doubt we will sell 2-3 players in the summer. I'm pretty sure we will, because we didn't sell any star players in the last few while. But if you were to just look at that squad, I don't think this would be the credit to him, because it's the first time that this would be the case since he's arrived. I don't think left back is the immediate place that you would then be saying that's where we need to be buying players.
Totally agree. There's no need. I think we can get another good 5 years out of Taylor. Easy. You know, and I don't think we need to go, you know, yeah, we get a billionaire comes in and buys a club, and every single player, we get the best left back in the world, we get the best right back in the world. But see, in terms of Taylor, I think Taylor does exactly what we need for the next 5 years. We don't need to improve our position. Or have I taken that too far?
I think you've taken that too far, because you're always, I mean, obviously, I see us being in a European final within 5 years, and so you would need to have a certain type of player to get to a European final within 5 years. Hey,
Andy Robertson?
I take Tierney back.
I suppose that would be the challenge in terms of, you know, getting into that. Would you take Tierney back? And yeah, a fit Tierney. I think Tierney will probably go to Newcastle or a team like that, you know. I'd like to see him do well there, obviously, you know, like, unlike someone else that we know, I've got no grievance with Tierney, and I wish him well, and I know he's a Celtic player, and I hope he's really successful. I like the fact that Greg Taylor wants to play for us, and again, I'll go back to it, I like the fact that Greg Taylor didn't come from a Celtic-minded background and batters his melt in for Celtic. because I think that sums up what Celtic is. It's not about being born into it. It's about buying into it. And that works for me, you know. That works for me 100%. And I would keep Greg Taylor in the team for as long as he wants to play for Celtic, because I think he gets it. I think he works hard. And I think he's got a bit of a Scottish understanding of what we're looking for. And I think he worked like a Trojan today. I was really pleased with him. I don't think he gave us much to complain about at all. And I don't see there's a need to improve left back at the moment. There's lots of other positions I think we can look at first. And you're right, I think we'll probably look at selling a couple of players. I think Abad will be away. I think Staffel will be away. Try to see who else in the team. I think Kyogo might get offers this season.
He's 28.
He's
either coming to Celtic and saying, give me a really good offer, or he goes. That's my gut feel there.
And I think we should give him a really good offer. I think we should make it that he doesn't need to go anywhere else, because financially it's good enough for him to stay, and I think it's a threat. But I think German teams will be interested in him.
And I think the thing is that I think there's a big culture of wanting to play for your national team, and the only barrier would be if the national team manager's continually saying to him, you'll not get in the national team as long as you're in Scotland. That could be a trigger for it as well.
But the challenge with that, the thing that undermines that though, is if Maida is getting called up playing in Scotland, then the league isn't disadvantaging him. So it's the coach's decision to disadvantage Kyogo rather than the league.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think it's probably maybe just the position that he's playing at Celtic and the position and the way that we play football. It might just not, you know, again, someone who's playing, you know, take it away from Kyogo and stuff like that. Go back 10 years, Gary Hooper. Mm-hmm. Gary Hooper was only ever going to be successful in a team that's winning and that plays attacking front foot football. And his problem always after he left Celtic was always going to be, he's never going to go to a top six English team. So he'd be going to a team who doesn't play a style of football that suits him. And it could well be the same principle that what we like about Kyogo might not be what the national team manager's looking for, and what he's, you know, for the way that he sees Japan playing.
Gary Hooper was told by Lennon that what he was looking for, he wasn't going to get, you know, in terms of, I want to say Grant Holt, but I'm not sure if I've got that right, was playing for Norwich at the time and was bringing goals in and didn't really get a sniff of the international setup. And Lennon said to Hooper, you're not going to get that step that you're looking for there. That's not the level. If you're going to do it, you're going to need to do it in Champions League, or you're going to need to then move to a top six team. And Hooper never listened to Lennon at that point. And I know a lot of people want to condemn Lennon for this, that and the other, but he was right. Because see if he'd stayed with us, his career wouldn't have went the way it went. Gary Hooper's career went down the tubes after he left us.
No, because again, it's that thing of he's a striker who thrives in a team who's playing on the front foot in the way that we play attacking football. And then when you go to Norwich, someone like Samaras would have been better going to Norwich. Someone who's an outball for a team who then gets them 50 yards up the pitch and then moves everything on again. And then when you get a breakaway, can just gallop down the park and create opportunities. He's much better suited to someone like Norwich than Gary Hooper ever would have been.
But, you know, Samaras could have played for any team in the world, obviously. You know,
obviously.
Samaras, different class, obviously. Although I do see people starting to come round to that. There's a lot more Samaras love now than there ever was back in the day, online and stuff like that, you know.
Because people sometimes, through maturity, gain
knowledge. Have you seen arrived at?
Yeah. Because obviously, with us being superior.
That passive-aggressive superiority of yours keeps coming through, doesn't it?
Yes. But I can't help being right.
I know, but you can't help how often you tell everybody. What do you think about the work that's been done in South Korea at the moment? Do you think that's to sign those two players? Or do you think that's just about the pre-season tour? Or...
I wouldn't be surprised if we're, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's about pre-season tour and looking at signing, particularly if it's 50-50 of you know, if there's German interest in Kyogo, where I think Germany's where has got the highest proportion of Japanese players of any of the leagues in European football. So
his agent's very active in Germany.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be unexpected if that happens. Delighted if he stays. I'm not trying to run him out the door or anything. I'm just, you know, trying to be practical about it. And so if that's the case, then surely we've got to be prepared for that happening. And it looks to me the way that Ange sets up that he has, you know, if you look at Giakoumakis and now you look at O, and you look at Kyogo, patently he likes a Kyogo's type striker for the first 60 minutes of a game, and then an oblique Giakoumakis, i.e. a bigger guy who's slightly different style of play for the last 30 minutes. So if that's the case and there's a possibility, not say if there's any possibility at all, you've always got to be prepared for it at a player trading club like us, of a bid coming in that matches our valuation of Kyogo, then you've got to have the ability to bring in these replacements straight away. And so, yeah, maybe we're looking at that. It's maybe a mixture of the two.
I think we're still looking at Cho. And I don't know why, but there's a lot of talk about that defensive midfielder that we were scouting before Christmas. I think Iowata might have sort of filled that gap, but I'd be curious to see what they're thinking there. But there's talk of two players, South Korean players, being definite possibilities. There's also talk, obviously, about the tour to Japan and incorporating games in South Korea as well. So maybe that's an aspect of what they were doing over there. I just worry that, you know, Japan and South Korea is going to be very expensive for Paul Tim to go to all of those games. You know, that's a lot of time for a big man.
That is. I think the North Curve punters should disband their TIFO collection and have a Paul the Tim going to the Far East collection to cover that.
Do you know, we've managed to avoid any conversation about the Celtic end plan. Maybe that's a podcast for another day. And we can go full on Celtic da I was here when conversation about that one, but maybe that should be, just do that as a teaser for the next time we ever decide to get
maybe
back
a teaser, because I think when the football's done, there is a conversation and a debate about things like flares at the football and don't go down 1970s jokes that, you know, and smoke and not being able to kick off games in time and TIFOs and Celtic end and, you know.
I thought it looked brilliant today. The flares and a wee man was loving it. Thought it looked excellent and the smoke and look at us, it's dead hard to see everything. And then we went on the way home, went through the south side, and we went to visit a Palm Bar head who was recovering from a heart transplant. And he said, you know, see that? I couldn't go to the game when all of that's going on now. So this has completely changed my perspective on these things. And the 2 years when we're driving away from it, we thought, never really thought about that. You know,
well, you see,
if that had happened, I couldn't be in there. And I was thinking, yeah, right, never, you know, and kind of
every
time, but his conversation made me think maybe not, maybe that's not fair, you know, maybe that's selfish.
I've ever been to the disabled Celtic supporters. Every Celtic forum I've ever been to where flares and things like that are discussed, the disabled Celtic supporters always talk about the problems that their members have got because of it. Every single game. So that always impacts. If I'm hearing that every single time I've ever been to a Celtic fan forum, that is always pressing in my mind when you see that.
Maybe that's something for post-season.
Yeah.
You know, maybe something we can come back.
Actually, what I was thinking, do you know what you should do? You should build, see next to the heaters in modern stands that we want, because we're getting old and you feel the cold a bit more, big fans. Then you can have those smoke bombs and then you switch the fans on, blow the smoke away, and you can kick the game off on time.
Do you know what? Speaking of big fans, right? See at the end of the game, went to the toilet, and this massive guy came into the toilet and was going, that's a Cal, that's a good player, huh? He's a really good player. If anybody was in a toilet in that stand, they'd know exactly, because the guy was massive and it was just, that's all you need to say. He was a good player, wasn't he? See that time when he hit that ball across and he was trying to shoot a goal, and he went out for a throw-in. That's a good player, eh? And then, that was brilliant. The whole toilet erupted in laughter. And there's nothing better than a toilet full of men laughing, is there?
It depends what they're laughing at, I suppose, you know.
That's true. The individual urinals gives you a bit of security that you don't need to worry about what they're laughing at. But then that's the problem, it's been all day, you know.
Anyway, I've no idea how long that's taken. I think that's about 2 hours. Pushing.
Listen, people complain that we don't do one, and then they complain we take too long. They can either listen or no listen. It's up to them. We're not doing it for them. We're doing it for us. Same as always.
None of this 20-minute nonsense stuff.
Anyway, I don't think 20-minute gyms do 20 minutes anymore.
I believe advertising standards have been pulling them up on that.
This now becomes obvious that we don't actually listen to anybody else anymore.
No, we don't.
Talk about arrogant, you know.
That's because we are superior. Yeah. Well, actually, the one podcast
that I... dragging me into that. That's you. It's not me.
The one podcast that I do listen to of football-related stuff, but only infrequently, it's about 5 times a season that I listen to it. It's the Heart and Hand podcast.
And I'll be listening to it on Monday morning.
Yes, exactly.
David, and get a podcast up and running. We're waiting eagerly.
Because we know he listens to us. I know. Do you know the reason I know he listens to us? Because he also has that slightly superior tone and attitude. He's obviously thought that's the way you do football fans podcast.
Yes, you and him have got an awful lot in common. What we need to do is we need to see if there's an appetite for it. Maybe put a bit of effort in to try to do a few more of these next season. Maybe get an end of the season.
I thought you were going to say we could do a joint Hand and Heart Celtic Underground podcast like we used to do with other ones.
No, we did that with Lost Boys. I never did it with Heart and Hand. And it's Heart and Hand. It's no Heart and Heart.
But very quickly, get back to something you said probably about 3 hours ago on this about the way that they want their football played after one of the last games that we beat them. I can't remember which one. They were talking about the style of... Now, I already think, as we've discussed, they play hoofball. They were talking about needing to have players who could get in the mixer, get in about them, and play for the knockdowns. And I thought, wow, maybe I'm being listened to a podcast in 1984 here, and I've gone back in time too far here. I've gone back to a previous episode from 1986, all about getting in the mixer, playing the ball up to the big man, getting the second ball. That's how they were talking.
I think they genuinely feel that we are delicate flowers in terms of how we play the game, and if you rumble us up, and I think that's what they came out to do today, and rumble us up and put us under pressure and knock us off our stride. Because we're all a bit airy-fairy and we're all a bit effeminate in terms of... See all this passing the ball about and trying to create chances? That's women's football. You know, that there's a bit of that. There's so many things about the perception of self, the perception of the rest of us, where they see themselves politically, socially. All of that's all tied up in that idea of get it in a mixer. Men's football. That's what they want. They want men's football, secure, masculine, heterosexual football. That's
exactly.
Yes. So nobody can call them into question. You know, even though we've got a guy with a ribbon in his hair, right? We're men.
No use of they.
Quite dramatically. Did you see the flag that's got the Mussolini quote on it?
Uh-huh.
And the pictures, they're flag in their stand. It's, I know tons of really, really good Rangers fans, right? And there'll be people going, oh, how dare you, every Rangers fan. You know that's not the case, and I know that's the case. There's hundreds of decent people that just so happen to support Rangers, right? But my God, at a Scottish football ground, that we're getting to a point where the fascists... statements are starting to appear on flags. We need to stop and take stock of that. And I know we're finishing, but that's a concern. There you go. That's me fixed that. That's a concern. I've rigorously addressed that topic and sorted it.
I think you should just take them aside and have a good talk. Give them a good talking to, and they will see sense.
Oh, lads, Have a think, yeah. Have a think.
Anyway,
what would your ma think about this? Seriously, if she saw yous right now, we all these black, we all black t-shirts and all that, but what would your ma say to you right now? Oh, she's there with you. All right, sorry, never mind. Don't keep going.
But talking about good heterosexual male football leads me on to one final thing. 27 games into the season and the women's team, Celtic women are now only 2 points behind Glasgow City.
Yes, I saw that. And there's a game, is it this week, is it next week at Celtic Park where they're going head to head?
I think it is. I think it's coming up in the next week.
Now, let's not kid ourselves on that. You know, if we were that into it, we would know exactly when that game's getting played. But see, if we are going to have a women's football team, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't, it should be the absolute best women's football team it can possibly be, and we should be winning that league. The same way if we've got an under-18s team, the under-18s team needs to win. See, if we've got a B team, the B team should be winning the league. We should be competing at every single level. So, absolutely, we want them to win every single thing they can win. I want Celtic to be, Celtic enter a Tiddlywinks team. I want the Tiddlywinks team to be the best Celtic Tiddlywinks team we can possibly have. So that would be tremendous. See, imagine we did a double this season, the men's and the women's league. That would be superb.
Well, so Thursday we play at home against Rangers. Don't know where we were playing it. Our normal home game is Broomfield. And I suppose it's an argument of don't take it to Celtic Park, keep it there because that's what the teams used to. And then Sunday we are away to Partick Thistle Women, and then next Thursday the 11th we are at home to Glasgow City. So that is key, and I've just seen it on the league table. Do you know we've conceded 7 goals all season, Celtic Women?
I mean, I watched you on the telly. I'd be a liar if I told you that I'd be intending to go to that game, but I hope we win because I hope Celtic win everything.
Well,
ain't it nice to Celtic? I want Celtic to do best.
Imagine we did an open top bus with a double winning women's team and the treble winning Celtic's team, men's team, on the same.
But we're not in the final of the women's Scottish Cup as well.
Yeah, that's my point. That they could win the double. The women's team could
win league cup already.
I don't know. No.
The headbutt game?
No, was that not to get in the Scottish Cup final?
Is that what it was? No, because they're playing Rangers in the Scottish Cup final. See, this is the benefit of coming in an hour early and you can see all the signs. telling you, it's like, I'm on the Scottish Cup final, I'm still against Rangers. I think we've won a trophy already. This is when you frantically Google and try and find out.
I am. If anybody can hear noises, it's me desperately trying to Google Scottish Women's Football League Cup. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I want them to do well, but unfortunately, I don't. Scottish Women's Football League Cup.
I admit my ignorance.
Yeah. I'm accepting that. It's not what I go and watch. I'm accepting that.
Right,
something like
that.
Yeah. There we go. Yes. So. But I'm now interested in the possibility of us women the league. And I think that'll be an incredible, getting back to, you know, people like you and Murray on Twitter saying that, you know, and other people, you know, we should give half of our attendance money to the wee teams to give them an advantage. Glasgow City, because they've been playing Champions League football, have got so much more money than any of them. Because Celtic are set up on every penny that's spent on the Celtic women's team has to be self-generated from self-sponsorship, et cetera, and from winning in competitions. So they are not subsidised in any way by revenue that's not directly generated for that team. So winning Celtic's men team winning the Champions League doesn't feed through to the Celtic women's team getting money from that. It's all self-generated stuff. So as a consequence, Glasgow City are the team with all the money in the women's league because they've had Champions League football forever. So it'd be amazing.
I do think, I must be honest, I do think there's something a wee bit sad about the fact that ultimately the women's game is going to be dominated by your Celtics, your Rangers, your Hearts, your Hibs, and play and teams like Glasgow City will inevitably wither on the vine. You know what I mean? Maybe not today, and maybe not in the next year, but I think long term, the financial security of being aligned to a big successful men's team will ultimately lead to the women's game running, you know, becoming fair, you know, almost a mirror image of the men's league, and there's something, I don't know, I won't say it to win, but there's something sad about teams like Glasgow City will eventually struggle in that league because of that, and yeah. Something about the purity of the game being undermined a wee bit. But having said that, I do want Celtic to beat them in the next game. There's no two ways about it, you know. But there you are.
Right, and well, with that, we normally preview the next men's game, but actually, there we are. We've just previewed in a really shit way. We have just previewed
with a complete lack of any knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah,
I'm quite proud of it, which is the biggest scandal of the whole thing.
Do you know our level of punditry reminded me when they were filling time on Radio Scotland before the manager thing? Willie Miller says more or less. And that Maeda, what a player. See the amount of running he does. I'm sure the stats somewhere out there would tell me exactly how much running he's done today. But I've not got them, and I don't know. I just think he's really good. And I thought, yeah, there are. And if your employer paid just a minimal subscription, that data should be sitting right in front of your nose right now to tell you that. What a fantastic level of punditry. I can get that from my dad in the car on the way home.
Yeah, we're allowed to be this ignorant because we are this ignorant, and we're not being paid to be anything more than this ignorant. Other people, you're expecting a bit more out of them, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm expecting a bit more of that. I'm sure somewhere I could be told that, but I've no idea, and I'm not going to look it up. Magic, great. How much you get for that, Willie?
Jengo beat Hearts.
Yes.
I think you're probably right. I think we probably will beat Hearts. The wee bit of a dead cat bounce. But what I'm interested in is I think that race for third is quite an interesting race.
Sky don't.
Exactly, it's ridiculous to be Sky going, but suddenly we're starting to talk about something else again, and you know it's 2011. But the Aberdeen will get beat at Ibrox more than likely, right? You've got to think they'll probably get beat at Ibrox, but that race for third, that's intriguing. See the championship. Who's going to win that? That's looking like a really interesting race. And just for the point of view of Scottish football being something worth watching, everybody's wanting to tell us that Scottish football is in the worst state it's ever been in. I'm looking at that centre forward for Motherwell. Watch that ball drop over his shoulder, run straight at Taylor and hit that ball in and score an absolutely brilliant goal. There's some amount of goals getting scored. There's some really good football. The problem we've got is the teams that come and face us play in such a negative way, we think Scottish football is garbage. There's lots of positives in Scottish football just now. There's lots of cracking stories to be had. And maybe the media need to start taking a look at them. We don't need, because we're not interested in looking at Celtic. But there's a lot of positives there. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with Queen's Park. And hopefully that might mean we can actually get an away ticket for a game next season if Queen's Park come up.
I love the away game criteria that come up with things like, so you can qualify for this game if you've been to at least 553 of the last 554 away games.
I read somebody say that as of next season, it's only season 22-23 that's going to count for your away ticket criteria. I'm sure I read somebody say that. But
yeah, the only thing is, in order to have got a ticket for 22-23 season, you had to have been to every single away game for the previous, with the exception of COVID season. Just to let you know, on your Hearts have got a new manager, Bounce. This is Hearts' last run of games since the middle of February. Lose, win, lose, 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 win.
Win. That's a manager bounce. That's what I'm talking about.
That's their
high bounce. Right?
That's their league game since the 19th of February.
I bet they never sacked their manager until maybe about 2 weeks ago. So that last one, they got a good win, that one. That's a bounce. maybe a bit flat, but it's a bounce nonetheless. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. We should beat them quite comfortably.
We should do. I mean, it is Tynecastle. They always play harder against us than they play against anybody else. So it will be more difficult. But you would like to think that the players we've now got, I mean, it's a full 7 days or 6 days of rest or whatever, that our players have got. So you'd like to think going into that game, obviously the whole country will be on high after the coronation and things like that. So you'd like to think that our players will go into that game ready to go. If we win this, that's it. Let's just get this over the line and win the league.
And we win the league that game, and then Rangers will give us a guard of honour for the coronation champions. I think that's highly appropriate as well.
Do we have to put the coronation cup up for... do we have to put that up to play for this season?
I think Charlie's got enough money, he can make a new one. Surely. Surely.
It's the reigning champions. We should just get a bye to the final. Let everybody else play it out. Let England put their best team in front of us and see if they can live with the Celtic.
Too scared of us.
Exactly.
So, what are we next week? Yes?
Yes. Yes. What's the score going to be?
3-1 at Celtic.
And who's the scorers?
Kyle will get 2. Jota will get 1.
Excellent. All right. With that, I will say, Eddie Pearson, thanks very much.
Pleasure as always. Hail, hail.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Well, hope you enjoyed that podcast. We'll be more along again soon at some indeterminate point in the future. That was Eddie Pearson rambling along with his too many beers. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
To each brand new bright tomorrow, make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring